Jeremiah chapter number 2 is where we're going to be for Sunday school. Jeremiah chapter number 2. In tonight's service, I'm looking forward, I think, unless the Lord just really turns me a different way, tonight I want to preach a message entitled God and Country out of Mark chapter 12. One of the things I love about the Bible is it's timeless. You know, milk gets dated. Even MREs for you Army people get dated. When I was a kid, I watched a guy clean out a garage and eat a 30-year-old can of pound cake from an MRE. Meals ready to eat that military folks eat, and he's still alive, so he lived through it. But you know, a lot of things have an expiration date, but the Bible doesn't. And I want to point you tonight, if the Lord doesn't change my mind, to a passage that I think very much speaks to the struggle that we see in our country today between God and country. And I can't think of a better advisor in this day and time than Jesus. And so tonight, I hope to take us there in this message of God and country. But this morning in the Sunday school hour, I want to bring you to the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah is known as a major prophet. We have defined them as major and minor, but I bet you if we got to heaven and saw Joel and Amos and said, "You are a minor prophet," they'd take exception to that because God gave them a major message. It was just indicative of the size of the book, but Jeremiah is a longer book and has many lessons to be learned. Now, I want to take you to the call of Jeremiah this morning, and I want you to see what God saw in Israel in this day, and I want the Lord to help us to see maybe if this is in our own hearts what had happened to Israel. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse number 1, the Bible says, "Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith the Lord, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness in a land that was not sown. Israel was holiness unto the Lord, and the first fruits of his increase. All that devour him shall offend, evil shall come upon them, saith the Lord. Hear ye the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and the families of the house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, What iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me, and have walked after vanity, and are become vain? Neither said they, Where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and of pits, and through a land of drought and the shadow of death, through a land which no man passed through, and where no man dwelt? And I brought you into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land and made mine heritage an abomination. The priests said not, Where is the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after things that do not profit. Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead." The passage that I've just read talks about the calling of the prophet Jeremiah. God is in the process of calling him, and he gives him a command to go cry into the ears of Jerusalem. And his first message is not a message of comfort and ear tickling. His first message is basically, Israel, I remember what you were like in the good old days, and now I know what you are now. It's not necessarily the best inaugural sermon that you're going to preach to a church. But God looks back at Israel and he refers to the good old days before he makes an indictment, before he shows them their present coldness. You ever heard the term the good old days? I think all of us, no matter where you're at in the age group in here, there's some of you that are senior saints. There are others of you, you're in the midlife stage. There are others of you, you say, I'm on the beginning side. But I even heard college students talk about the good old days. College students talking about the good old days when there was no homework, when you could eat popsicles, you could drink Kool-Aid, and you didn't have to pay bills. Those were the good old days. But I'm sure for some of you as you get older, you know, you talk about the good old days. I can still remember as a kid going to the local convenience store. It was in a weird intersection that was called Four Corners. Larry, you live near Cliffside. You've got 6 points where there's like 6 roads that intersect and in the same spot. Well, there was a place that was called Four Corners, and there was a community store, that a convenience store that was right there. And my dad used to take me when I was a little kid and set me up on the stainless steel drink box that had no glass. It was all stainless steel sliding doors, when you could actually slide one of those doors open, reach in and grab a glass bottle of Coke. And my dad would set me on that drink box, and he would put a drink in one hand, a Coke in one hand, and peanuts in the other. And I would take those peanuts and I would pour them in my Coke. You say, why did you do that? Because that's what everybody else did. And it didn't taste the best, but you know what? I still enjoyed it. I sat there and I would eat my peanuts, drink my Coke with all those farmers, and I could still remember the yarns that they would spin in there. Only the Lord knew whether or not they were true. And boy, those were some good old days. I really enjoyed those days. And I look back at that scene in my life, I say, boy, life was a lot simpler then, but I would term it as the good old days. But here's the sad reality of what's happened to Israel. At this moment of time, their best days are behind them. Now, I know from a human standpoint, we might say physically that some of our best days are behind us. You might say, well, I can't work like I used to. I don't have the stamina that I used to have. But it's not so much the physical that God's addressing here. Here's the sad point. Israel was a lot worse off in their present day than they were years prior. And those were the good old days, and now they're living in the harsh reality of coldness. And I think the lesson for us to learn is it is a shame if our best days spiritually are behind us. But sometimes that's the truth. And I want you to hear God's rebuke to the nation of Israel. And I want you to hear God's heart, as not only does He tell Israel what is wrong, but listen to me, He desires to help them make it right. And I'll tell you, God's the same today. Just as God told Israel, this is what's wrong, He also said, wherefore I will yet plead with. Now, to help us understand where Israel's at, first of all, I want you to see what I call their past condition. This is where Israel was at when they first got started. God describes it in several ways, and beginning in verse 2, when He tells Jeremiah, go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, thus saith the Lord. Now, I want to stop here for just a moment, because here God says, I want you to go to Jerusalem, and do you know the first thing He tells them? He says, you go unto them, and you say, thus saith the Lord. Before He even gives them the message, God says, I want to make sure they know who is really talking. That carries some great significance. My children, when they were younger, I can still remember a time when my two boys were outside playing. And for whatever reason, I think it was dinner time, we wanted them to come in. And so I told my daughter, I said, honey, why don't you go out there and tell the boys to come in? She went out on the front porch, she told the boys to come in, and they didn't listen to her any more than a man in the moon. They just blew her off. Karis came back in. She was a little bit huffy, and she said, Daddy, they're not listening to me. And I said, you go back out there and you tell them that Daddy said to come in. That was a totally different response. They dropped everything. It didn't matter who was winning, who was losing. They come right in, just like as innocent as the pure driven snow. You know what made the difference? When they understood who the message came from. This is not Jeremiah giving his opinion. This is God Almighty speaking directly to the nation of Israel. And I want to say this. Do you know that when we open this book, do you know who's speaking? God. That's why when I preach to young people every summer, it didn't happen as much this summer thanks to the virus, but everywhere I go, listen, when the Bible is open, you listen and you pay attention. Why? Because when the Bible's being read, listen, that's God speaking. Now, what does God tell Israel? He reminds them about their past condition. Thus saith the Lord, He says, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth. He said, Israel, I remember the early days. I remember when you were pleasant. I remember the early days whenever you were pleasant and the kindness of youth. You know, from a physical standpoint, youth is kind, isn't it? I mean, you think about your youth and think about even for college students. You ever, it's funny to me, I deal with college students and some of them talk like they're 70 years old. Oh, I don't have the energy that I used to do. I think, boy, it's a shame to be 21 and be so worn out. But you know, no matter what age group you are, as far as, let's say, if you're 20 and above, you look back and there's probably a time you're like, yeah, boy, I used to have endless amounts of energy, but it's not quite so. God looked back in Israel's history. He said, I remember those early days. I remember when you were young, and I remember how pleasant you were. And then He continues on. He says, and then He says, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness. It's almost like He uses a term here, if I could use the word romance. The love of thine espousals. God said, I remember what it was like when you loved me and you chased after me. Some of you couples in here, you need to be reminded of maybe those early days. Do you remember when he chased after her? When you chased after her, do you remember? Maybe for some of you ladies, when you chased after him. I don't know. Brother Camp, who used to be the pastor here, Brother Camp would often tell the story about how that he was courting his wife in those early days. She didn't wanted nothing to do with him. He liked her. She didn't like him. And so this was his mode of operation. He said, well, she can't leave. What won't leave her? And so everywhere she was, he made a point to be there, and it grew and grew, and they got married, and you know what? They're doing great. Now, I don't necessarily acknowledge that philosophy for you college fellas in here, because if he's got a gun, Dad does, and wants you to stay away, you better stay away, you know. But that's what happened, you know, in the latter part of their teenage years. High school sweethearts, they get married. But you know what? In those early days, we used to actually, did you know before cell phones and texting, we used to actually write love notes. Now it's just probably a bunch of emojis. And you know, the problem is if your relationship's just purely electronic, first of all, some guy in California is probably reading everything that you say, and the government does too. And you know what? When you die and your phone dies, you've lost the message. But there's some people, they still have notes that were written years ago. You remember those times whenever you would write a note or you would do a kind token? What? The love of thine espousals. God said, there was a time, Israel, when you heaped it on me. There was a time when you loved me. But sometimes it's not just Israel that's in that state. I'm talking maybe to some of us this morning. There was a time when our love for God was burning much brighter than it is right now. And maybe you don't remember, but God does. And maybe this morning God's reminding you of where you used to be. The love, the kindness of thine youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness. He said, I remember when you were pleasant. I remember when you were passionate about me. And then in verse 3, God said, hey, I remember when you were pure. Israel was holiness unto the Lord. Don't let the word holiness scare you. God's always wanted His people to be holy, as He is holy. And Israel was separated unto the Lord. You know, when I got saved, I'll tell you what, I was a real piece of work, and I still am, the Lord knows. I've not arrived by any means, but you know, after I got saved, there were just certain things that just started to fall off, if I could say it that way. I would find myself, there was language that I used, even by the time I came to college, there was still language, it wasn't outright cursing, but language that I would use that was not the best. And you know, as I sat under the preaching of God's Word and as I was around God's people, I would say, you know what, that is not a good thing to say. And I found that I hope, and it goes on the rest of my life, I hope that there's things that will fall off as I separate myself from the world and unto God. But here, there was a time when there was a distinct difference between Israel and the world. And I wonder if maybe there was a time 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago when we were much more tender about holiness unto the Lord. And when I'm talking about holiness, I'm not just talking about just a mere list of rules, although I will tell you holiness will demand you to draw boundaries. If you're going to separate unto God, you do have to separate from the world. But I wonder if there are things that you would have tolerated months ago or wouldn't have tolerated months ago that you find yourself tolerant of. God said, hey, I remember your past condition. I remember when you were pure. Before we go to the next point, I just want to ask you this. Is your past spiritually better than your present? God never intended for it to be. So first of all, we see their past condition. Number two, I want you to see their present coldness. In verses 4 and following, God is going to ask Israel several questions. Questions to point out where they're at right now in their lives. Do you remember when you were a kid and your parents asked you questions? And usually when they interrogated you, there was a seriousness to it. And the questions they asked had a point to them. You know, questions like this, do you want a spanking? That was really a rhetorical question. You didn't answer that. It was understood. Hopefully, you were like, no, I don't. You ever heard this question? Do you want me to pull this car over and wear you out? You want me to wash your mouth out with soap? Or how about this one? Do you want me to give you something to really cry about? You know, when those questions were asked, you just sat there and listened. And the question had such power behind it. You knew the direction. You knew the drive. And you just didn't say anything. I want you to hear the questions that God asks Israel. And perhaps God asks us today. Verse 5, thus saith the Lord. Listen to this question. What iniquities have your fathers found in me that they are gone far from me and have walked after vanity and are become vain? I could give you the Beale paraphrase. It's like God asking, what have I done to you to cause you to go so far from me? You ever been in a human relationship that's fractured? I have. You live long enough, you will. Those relationships, when they're fractured, many times it may start with one party, but before it's over with, it may be because of wrongdoing by both parties. Listen to me. When our relationship with God is fractured, mark it down, He is not at fault. God's like, what have I done to you? You know, there are things that sometimes come in our lives that unfold that we don't fully understand, but I have to come to the conclusion that everything that God does in my life is for good. I just recently had a niece of mine, or actually a second cousin, I guess, I should say. But she's sort of like a niece to me. And there's a custody dispute right now that's going on with her mom and dad. And it just has gotten nasty over time. And her dad went before a mediator earlier in the week and didn't turn out the way that we wanted. I'd prayed that day. I said, God, would you please allow this young lady to be with her dad? I really think that's the best thing for her. Didn't work out that way. And just last night I was texting her and I said, you know what? I said, I prayed the other day and God didn't do it and I don't understand. But all I can tell you is hang in there because I've seen in my own life where God can take some of the most miserable things and turn them into a blessing in the years to come. And I thought to myself, you know, even in the midst of something that appears bad, I cannot accuse God of being bad to me because He's been nothing but good. But when our relationship with God is fractured, if I could say it that way, you can rest assured it's not because God has wronged us. Now, in his question, God shows that there is distance between he and Israel when it says that they have gone far from me. He tells Israel, Israel, you have gone far from me. That's a dangerous place to be. Did you know that? You know, I've been in some places through the years that I didn't really enjoy at the time. I remember years ago, I was in New York City coming home from a baseball game, was taking a bus because the subway caught on fire, trying to desperately get back to the place we were staying, and on New York City at midnight hearing gunshots with no police cars around. It wasn't the good guys. That was a little bit unnerving. That's a dangerous place to be. But you know, while you may think being in a major city with gunfire is a dangerous place like I do, I want to tell you this morning, you know where the most dangerous place is to be? I'll tell you, to be in Maranatha Baptist Church and be far from God. That's a bad place to be. To be anywhere and your heart be far from God. Doesn't matter what your status is in life. It doesn't matter how long you've been a church member. Our hearts are prone to wander. Lord, I feel it in their times. We find ourselves in pews, but our hearts are far away. I want to ask you this morning, where are you at? Are you here? Or are you out there? You know, there comes a point in a man's life when he's far from God that God has a way of drawing his attention to it and drawing him to himself. I remember when I was a kid, I've learned this now that I've been an adult for a few years, that when you were a kid, everything looked big. The woods behind the place where I was raised looked huge. It looked like Yellowstone National Park. It was huge. I went back there years ago, and I was like, my attitude was like, this is it? Like, this is it? I mean, I can walk clear to the back there in 5 minutes, and this is it? But I remember as a kid, my dad, he took me squirrel hunting. We would go out behind the house. We'd walk out a good ways, and we'd find a good hickory tree, and we'd sit underneath that hickory tree. You'd say, why would you sit under a hickory tree? Because squirrels like to eat hickory nuts. And you can't keep them from food very long because they enjoy that. And my dad took me out in the woods. I remember we hiked out there a good bit and we plopped down at the tree. And I'd only been there for 5 or 10 minutes. And now that I have children and I've taken children with me hunting, I have understood how my dad probably felt when I did this. But after 5 minutes of sitting there, I looked at Dad and I said, I'm thirsty. And he looked at me and he said, all right, he said, if you'll walk straight that way, it'll take you to the house and you go in there and grab you something and me something and bring it back. And so I looked at where his hand was pointed. I said, all right. And so I walked a straight line. And I'll tell you, after about 3 or 4 minutes, I found myself where I needed to be. I walked in the back door. My mom's a little bit surprised. I said, well, I'm just getting us something to drink, and grabbed out two, either Pepsis or Cokes. They were 16-ounce bottles, I think, and walked back up in the woods. And I'd taken about 5 or 10 steps into the woods, and I began to look around, and getting back to him was going to be a lot harder than getting to the house because there was nobody to point me and say that direction. I didn't pay attention. I just wanted to get something to drink. And now I'm starting to think, okay. And I remember I wandered around for about 10 minutes. And you know what, after a season of just being away, I remember I dropped to my knees with 2 cold bottles of Coke or Pepsi in my hands, and I just did what any little boy would do in that situation. I just began to bawl. Not B-A-L-L, B-A-W-L. I mean wail. It was just right in the middle of those woods. Just like a fire siren. And you know, after a little bit of that, all of a sudden, I remember my dad, I just started screaming. I was like, Daddy, where are you? And boy, all of a sudden, I heard that voice come from a distance. And as soon as I did, I'm telling you, the tears dried up and I made my beeline to that voice. You know why I was so distraught? I'm going to tell you why. Because there was distance between me and him. And I'm going to tell you, life has a way sometimes of banging you around to when you discover just how far you are that maybe God breaks your heart. You don't have to be in the pig pen to be far from God. Man can wear a suit and be far from God. Israel, where are you? Where are you at? I'm far from God. In that question, God not only talks about their distance, but notice at the end of verse 5, and have walked after vanity and are become vain. Where are you at? You're walking after things that are empty. You're pursuing things that have no eternal value. At one time, they were following God. Now they're following the desires of their own hearts. And then notice verse number 6, neither said they, where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and of pits? I'm not going to read the whole verse, but can I basically tell you this? Israel had just forgotten what all God had done for them. Listen to me, your heart cannot be in awe of Calvary and be in the world at the same time. They forgot that God had led them through some of the most desolate places. They forgot the miracles that God had done for them. And I find that in the times of my life when I have had the hardest heart, it's because I forgot of everything. I forgot about the things that God had done for me. Listen, if you're here this morning and you're not where you need to be with God, I'll tell you what, if you just take a few moments to remember the valleys that He's brought you through, to remember the fact that He delivered you from hell, to remember the forgiveness that He gave you so that you didn't have to live from day to day with guilt. If you just take some time to remember that, I'd pray that your heart would turn again to where it needs to be. Verse 7, and I brought you to a plentiful country to eat the fruit then, the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land and made mine heritage an abomination. Just ungrateful. I remember when I was a kid growing up, my dad had given me a dollar bill. It was his way of trying, I think he was trying to buy me out of a temper tantrum. And back then, a dollar was worth more than it is now. You can't even buy a Snicker bar for a dollar. Back then, you could buy at least two. That's inflation for you. And I remember my dad giving me a dollar bill, and I remember taking that dollar bill, and right in front of him, I just ripped it in half and threw it in the trash can. You say, what happened after that? You don't want to know. I bet you if you were in Walmart and you saw somebody do that, you'd look, you'd walk out, you'd say, that ingrate. You know, when I was a dorm student, I was real authority on child rearing. I was really good at identifying in grocery stores all these parents that had it wrong. My kid will never do that. My kid will never do that. My kid will never do that. I'll tell you what, I have reaped the whirlwind. I've learned. But you know what, we go around and we look and we say, oh boy, I'll tell you, that person's an ingrate. That person's an ingrate. If you walked into a store and you saw a child throw a fit like that, you'd look at them with condemnation. All right, let me tell you something. When we are unthankful and we live apart from God and we're not thankful for the things that He's given us, are we not in the same boat? Israel, where are you? I'll tell you where you're at. You're far from God, you're walking after vanity, and you're filled with unthankfulness. I want to ask you, where are you? It's really not that difficult to figure out where you're at, if you're honest. You know, with my boys growing up, it used to be going to a pawn shop. But with my daughter, that's not recreation. Now it is going shopping. Go to a mall. Years ago, we were heading down. I think I took her to the Mall of Georgia, which is a huge mall, a mistake. That's what it is. But you know, even a man has to humble himself, and he has to stand before the directory kiosk, and he has to look at this large sprawl. But there's one thing that in particular I'm looking for. I'm looking for a little star or a little human being, a figure that is placed on that map, and it says, "You are here." It's really not that hard to figure out where you're at if you'll just take the time to look. First of all, you see Israel's past condition. Then you see their present coldness. But the last thing I want you to see is God's pleading cry to Israel. In verse 9, the verse starts out with the word wherefore. Basically, God is saying, all right, remember what I said to you these first 8 verses? I have given you all of this. I've told you about where you used to be, how you used to be pleasant, and now your heart is far from me, and now this wherefore is bringing us to a very important thing. So what is God going to do about it? I think God's just made His case that Israel has slighted Him in a major fashion. There's no doubt about it. The question now is, what is God going to do? Now, before I show you what God is going to do, think about what we would do. What do we do when somebody slights us and hurts us? My oldest son Andrew and I, we were in the car one day and just sitting there, and I just, as a dad, sometimes we do ornery things. I looked at him, I said, "Son, let's play a game." He said, "What's that?" I said, "Let's play who can hit the softest." He looked at me and said, "The softest?" I said, "Yeah, the softest." He said, "All right." I said, "You go first." And boy, I mean, he reared back, and it was like a 30-minute endeavor of slow motion. And he finally nicked my sleeve. And he looked at me with that look of satisfaction as if to say, "What do you think?" I said, "Man, that's pretty good." I said, "Now it's my turn." He said, "All right." And he put his shoulder up there, and I reared back and popped him about as hard as I could. And he looked at me with those big old blue eyes, and I mean, all of a sudden, they lit up with fire, and I looked at him and I said, "Sorry, I lose." And you know what? When that was over with, he looked at me, and those eyes were burning, and he said, "Let's play again, and you go first." Now, full disclaimer, he got that attitude from his dad, because you know what? I'm natured the same way. What do you think we would have done if we had these things done to us like God mentions? I'll tell you, in our human nature, we say, "All right, you want to hit me, then I'll hit you harder." That's the way we're geared. And I want to go on record as we close this Sunday school class by saying this: I am so glad that God is not like us. Amen. Wherefore I will yet, here it is, plead with you. It's the idea of beg. To strongly urge. Have you ever really strongly pled with someone? Even to the point of tears? I wasn't raised in a Christian home. My dad drank heavily. I remember one day, not a lot of people know this, my dad was incarcerated years before I was born for killing a man in a brawl in a bar. And it was not intentional in the sense that he didn't have the intention of killing that man, but he hit him in such a way that it killed him and just was wrong place, wrong time. So my dad had a very short fuse, had an anger problem. I remember one day I came home and my dad was sitting in the shed. He had a handgun in his hand. I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" He said, and he talked about a neighbor who had wronged him. He said, "I'm just really upset." He said, "I think I'm going to go up there." And I can still remember as a kid, you know what I did? I just pled with my dad. I begged him. I hugged his neck. I wept. I cried. And you know what? After about 30 minutes of persuasion, my dad went inside, slept off the rest of his drunkenness, and all was well. But I'm going to tell you what, during that time, I knew that I felt like there was a life on the line. I remember pleading. I remember begging. Listen to me, has there ever been a time in your life where you just so earnestly pled with somebody as if you felt it was life and death? That's God right here. If I could personalize it, the person in this room whose heart is farthest from God, listen to me, God is begging you right now. In spite of all of your running, in spite of all of your distance, in spite of all of your unthankfulness, God Almighty pleads with you. Who are we for Him to plead with us? The Creator pleading with the creation. And notice what He says. "Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead." How serious is God about Israel getting right with Him? I'll tell you how serious He is. He said, "I mean this so much, I'll plead with you and I'll plead with your children's children." I was raised in public school and rode the school bus all the way until probably 11th or 12th grade when I finally got a vehicle and I could drive to school. But in our neighborhood, I'll never forget, there was a young man, his name was Thomas from New Jersey. And he and his family had moved to near Yadkinville, North Carolina. You talk about culture shock. Thomas spoke a language that I didn't understand. It was called English, is what he spoke. I spoke Southern. But I'll tell you, Thomas had some ways about him. I'll never forget one day there was a kid on the school bus that had gotten under his skin. And if there was anybody on that bus that you did not want to mess with in a verbal fight, it would be Thomas. Because Thomas had a very quick tongue. And he also had a very big fist. It looked like that big when you saw it. And I remember this boy was egging it on with Thomas, and Thomas had had enough. And finally, Thomas stood up, and he raised that big old fist, and I'll never forget what he told the kid. It was such a tense moment, I couldn't laugh out loud, but I fell under the seat just trying to keep from laughing. He looked at that kid with that huge fist, and he said, "Listen, if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to hit you so hard that your grandchildren are going to have black eyes." First time I'd ever heard that in my life. And I just sort of slipped down under the seat, heaving but not laughing out loud. Now for you literalists here, you're like, "Well, does that mean either?" No, they're not really going to have black eyes. But he was driving home a point. It's like I'll go from generation to generation. It's talking about the intensity of that moment. Listen to me. Now God could have very well pled with their grandchildren as well as their children. But God said that to show just how intense He was on them getting right with Him. And I want to end the Sunday school lesson telling you this. If you find yourself farther from God than you've ever been, or just farther than you used to be, there's a God in heaven who wants you more than you even want Him. There's no reason why the best days of your life couldn't be right now. Spiritually, if you'll swallow your pride and see what God's done for you and return to Him. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Our Father, we thank